See what great love the Father has lavished on us, that we should be called children of God. And that is what we are. The reason the world does not know us is that it does not know Him. Dear friends, now we are children of God, and what we will be has not yet been made known. But we know that when Christ appears, we shall be like Him, for we shall see Him as He is. All who have this hope in Him purify themselves, just as He is pure. Everyone who sins breaks the law. In fact, sin is lawlessness. But you know that He appears so that He might take away our sins. And in Him is no sin. The one who lives in Him keeps on sinning. No one who lives in Him keeps on sinning. No one who continues to sin has either seen Him or known of Him.
Dear children, do not let anyone lead you astray. The one who does what is right is righteous, just as He is righteous. The one who does what is sinful is of the devil, because the devil has been sinning from the beginning. The reason the Son of God appeared was to destroy the devil's work. Those who are born of God will not continue to sin, because God's seed remains in them. They cannot go on sinning, because they have been born of God. This is how we know who the children of God are and who the children of the devil are. Those who do not do what is right are not of God's children, nor are those who do not love their brothers and sisters. For this is the message you heard from the beginning. We should love one another. Do not be like Cain, who belonged to evil and murdered his brother. And why did he murder him? Because his own actions were evil and his brothers were righteous. Do not be surprised, my brothers and sisters, if the world hates you. You know what we have passed from life to death because we love each other. Anyone who does not love remains in death. And anyone who hates a fellow believer is a murderer. And who knows what no murderers have eternal life in them.
This is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down His life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for one another. If any one of you has material possessions and sees a brother or sister in need but has no pity on them, how can the love of God be in you? Dear children, let us not love with words or tongue, but with actions and in truth. This is how we know that He belongs to the truth and how we set our hearts at rest in His presence. If our hearts condemn us, we know that God is greater than our hearts, and He knows everything. Dear friends, if our heart does not condemn us, we have confidence before God and receive Him anything we ask because we keep His commands and do what pleases Him. In this and His command to believe in the name of His Son, Jesus Christ, and to love one another as He commands us. Those who keep His commands live in Him and He in them. And this is how we know that He lives in us. We know it by the Spirit He gave us.
Thank you, readers. Wow, it's warm in here. Was there some sort of otherworldly influence that brought the heat in here? I don't know. I detect some sort of disturbance in here. Welcome. For those of you that don't know, my name is Ron Crawford. Obviously, I'm not a youth, but I do hang out with them a lot, and I was in the spirit of our faith elected to do this. So we'll hopefully bring you a message that's meaningful today. I wanted to start just to refer back a little bit to the drama that you saw, because I know that some of you may be visitors or some of you may be even new to the congregation since that really kind of took off or really began. The whole Screwtape vignettes there are based on a book by C.S. Lewis called The Screwtape Letters. Written, I think, in the 1940s or 50s, somewhere like that. So not modern literature, but certainly an entertaining read. Basically, in the book, it's a head demon, Screwtape, who is influencing, encouraging. Certainly, you know, if you have a read of the book, the Screwtape in the book is much more nurturing than the Screwtape of the Valley Church implementation. But certainly C.S. Lewis, also known, other best-known works, probably Chronicles of Narnia, but... Um, you know, I encourage you, if you get a chance, to look it up and have a read. There's a little bit of background to it that I wanted to share, which is that I looked it up, and we originally first did a Screwtape skit here in 2002. It was written, the original script was written by then Janine Huber, who was writing it to support a series that Al did on the seven deadly sins. And so we started with one, and she ended up writing seven, and we did seven of those. So if you really suffered through it today, then you should have been here then. But there's definitely a connection of that. First of all, it definitely ties directly into the things that I want to talk about today, which is one reason that we brought it back. Secondly, you'll notice today that there is a second offering to support the Chapmans, which is now Janine's married name, who are missionaries in Taiwan. And so kind of to tie that together, we brought back the characters that she created in this context. You know, for me personally, given that I've played the role, Screwtape has become for me a symbol of good and evil. And I think that, you know, one of the things about youth services is that when we do them, a part of what we do is what the kids want to say, what they want to say to you. A part of what we do with that is, you know, what they want to see. And for better or worse, that's one of those things that they really wanted to see. So one of the reasons that I made an appearance here. The third part of how we put together these youth services is really from the perspective of what is it that also we think that the kids need to hear. And so that hopefully is the basis for this message I have for you today. So first of all, a little background. We had the kids read for you the entire third chapter of 1 John. Lots of stuff to cover in there, and we wanted them to have an opportunity also to read. So we covered a lot of space there, but let me just give you some background for this message of the book. The book 1 John is identified as the author, at least in the resources I checked, as John, the same author of the Gospel of John as well as Revelation. It's in the form of a letter, as many of the books of the New Testament are, although it's not identified specifically for a target audience, say, such as Corinthians or Colossians or something like that would be. It's written to believers, certainly, but there's no specific location specified. It's written in a time of increasing what's called Gnosticism, and it's got a G in it, but you don't say the G. That's a phrase that really is very much popular today with a lot of modern literature, especially things like the Da Vinci Code, other modern writings like that, really bring a lot of focus on Gnosticism. This was written at a time when Gnosticism was really getting its start, and it was really in its infancy, and it was something that was characterized as kind of some strange aspects. And probably in this point, when this letter was written, the primary aspect was there was a belief that the spirit was entirely good and that matter was entirely evil. And so there's some things in Gnosticism to explore with that, which is, you know, that led people to have some skewed beliefs. It made people believe that that people's bodies, our bodies, are evil and that God is spirit and good. Well, that sounds, you know, not too far out of line, but then that salvation was an escape from the body and achieved not by faith but by special knowledge. In fact, I'll refer to my Greek expert, and I don't point it out because I have a student of Greek over here. Gnosis in Greek is knowledge, and so that's the indicator of that. Now we get interesting. Christ's true humanity was denied in two ways. So in other words, if the spirit is completely pure and the body is evil, then how could Christ be in the spirit? And so there could be a spirit in the body. And so there's two views of this, that he really only appeared to have a body, so he was spoofing, he didn't really have a body, or that he entered into the body at baptism and he left before he died. So you can see this belief is starting to get a little strange. And then the last part that I wanted to bring up was that because the body was evil, it was treated harshly. And so any of you that might have seen the movie or read the book Da Vinci Code, you know that there's an aspect there of really punishing each themselves, but because of that, there also was a sense that the body could not do but evil, so it didn't really matter what you tried. So you were going to sin, and that was your nature, and so there was no effort to try to not do that. And so this is the time that John is faced with. This is the situation, and so he writes this letter, and he's trying to do two things. He's trying to expose these false teachers and their false teachings, as well as give believers the assurance of salvation and give them encouragement, as is often done by the writers of these letters. So let's just dive into some of the sections here, and we'll take a look. So chapter 3, verse 1, introduces the concept of children of God. And, you know, to restate it there, it says, "See what great love the Father has lavished on us, that we should be called children of God, and that is what we are. The reason the world does not know us is that it did not know Him." So it really introduces the fact that we all are children of God. All of us here, everyone in the world, everything in creation is a being, is a part of God's world. You know, there was some an interesting opportunity that that I had recently, and it was some training that I had, which was actually through work, and it was an opportunity to learn about different generations. And in the generations, basically, you cover, you know, basic frameworks of demographics, when people were born and what situation that puts them in. And it's probably some terminology that you've heard, things like traditionalists and baby boomers and Gen Xers and millennials, different things. You'll see a lot more of that in the modern press and a lot of different things that you read about. This really provided me an interesting insight to my own self in that, personally, I'm what's also called a cusper, which means I'm between these two generations. I'm between a Gen X and a baby boomer, right on the middle. I personally associate myself more with Gen X, for whatever that's worth. And I got thinking as I prepared all this sermon that, you know, all of that stuff is really irrelevant in the terms of the context of this message. Because what this message is telling us is that it really doesn't matter the label that we have. It really doesn't matter how we associate ourselves, what we pursue. It doesn't matter what others think of us. We are all God's creation. We are all God's children. It doesn't matter our social standing. It doesn't matter our cultural background. It doesn't matter our political beliefs. It doesn't matter our color. The belief is the thing that makes us different. There are those that believe, and there are those that don't. And that's the only difference that matters across all those generations, across all of those situations that we find ourselves in. So to firm that up, John takes us then in 3:3 to all who have this hope in Him purely themselves, all who have this hope in Him purify themselves just as He is pure. So what's this hope? We hope that He exists? No, it's not that we hope that He exists. It's not hope like, I hope I get a GPS for my birthday. This is the hope that is a sustaining, it's an unshakable confidence that we who believe in Him will live with Him. And that's a strength, that's a difference that we can have as believers and as followers of Christ, that those that don't have the assurance. So let's move then to the fourth verse. Everyone who sins breaks the law. In fact, sin is lawlessness. But you know that He appeared so that He might take away our sins. And in Him is no sin. No one who lives in Him keeps on sinning. No one who continues to sin has either seen Him or known Him. Oh, wait. Does that mean that I don't sin? Does that mean now I know Him and so I don't sin? Well, really what John is trying to encourage us here is that we don't be characterized by sin. Our lives are lived in such a way that we don't just claim this great victory of knowledge of Christ and turn that around into something that gives us the ability to sin. That's what they were fighting in the Gnosticism, was the fact that, well, my body is inherently evil, and so it will do evil things, so I'm not going to fight that. What John is trying to say is, listen, when you know Christ, the life that Christ would want is not one of sin. It is not one where you would be characterized as a sinner, and so you need to live in that way. Is it realistic to attain perfect sinlessness? Absolutely not. It's impossible. There was only one sinless individual, and we can't be it. In other words, it's not us. So John makes a transition at this point to another topic, which is love. And he actually goes and he characterizes some of the aspects of love, and he goes through and he uses really one of the most classic and most beloved kind of representations of love, which he does in verse 16. This is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down His life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for one another. If any one of us has material possessions and sees a brother or sister in need but has no pity on them, how can the love of God be in you? Dear children, let us not love with words or tongues, but with actions and in truth. I had, in very recent history, two very compelling examples of this that I witnessed. A few nights ago, I was at the senior awards banquet, or senior awards ceremony, not a banquet, there was food, but it was afterwards, it wasn't a banquet. And one of the things that they did there is they recognized an individual who was graduating and was entering the Air Force Academy, was actually going to miss graduation because of that. And I was astounded, I was very pleased, but I was astounded that that was greeted with a standing ovation by that crowd. That was very impressive, not so much for the fact, but there was no political motive there. It was indicative of someone's sacrifice as they went forward. The second one I had was I took a trip to Washington with the eighth graders and my daughter, and I'll spare you all the gory details of that trip, but let me just say that 4-day trip in a bus plus stomach virus, not a good scene. But one of the things that that I witnessed there was a fairly new memorial that they have in the area, which is for the World War II veterans. It's the World War II memorial. It actually opened about 4 years ago. It was the weekend before Memorial Day weekend, and so there was a dedication ceremony that occurred there. And so there was a number of World War II veterans that were here, and I know that we have some members here that were participating in that. The words I have for you, if you have not been there, go. Don't wait, you need to go. It is very, as things go, low-key. It's very, it's not flashy, and it's not like the Vietnam Memorial where there's names on the wall or anything, but it's very meaningful. And I think that the thing for me was that because there was a dedication there was a number of these veterans that were wandering around, and here's a group of 80-some kids that came through, and as well as the general public that were there. And I was most impressed by the way that those obvious veterans were greeted, because they weren't, as they scurried along in their walkers or in their wheelchairs or otherwise, they weren't greeted with, come on, get out of the way, I want to go see that fountain. They were greeted with respect, and they were greeted with a love that was really impressive. And I was very impressed by the number of people that actually stopped and would ask somebody, are you a veteran of World War II? And if they said yes, they would say, thank you. How do you like your memorial? I think that's indicative of the kind of respect that we need for service. But is that the service that John is talking about here? That's lay your life on the line kind of service, life or death type of sacrifice. That's the most visible to us. But what John is calling us to here is an everyday kind of sacrifice that we can make. It's not something where you have to lay your life on the line. It's something where you have to lay your time, your resources, your energy, your focus on the line. That's your sacrifice. There are sacrifices that others make in this world where their lives are at hand. There are other sacrifices that people make where all that it costs them is a little bit of their possessions. And that's the type of sacrifice, that's the type of love that John is calling us to demonstrate here. You know, sometimes we make a lot of excuses for why we don't do things. And sometimes we regret those excuses, and sometimes we grow stronger in them. And we assure ourselves that we're making the right decision because the excuses that we're making are the right way for us. This, if nothing else, is a call to reevaluate those excuses and reevaluate those decisions for or against service. You know, I asked for Christmas for a version of the Bible that's called The Message. I know many of you are familiar with it. I actually, to be honest, used this as a motivation to try to make myself read the entire Bible from back to front. I figured maybe in this format I could do it. I've tried in other formats and I haven't. But what I've discovered as I've gone through this is just some of the representations that the author has brought to this that really are meaningful for me. And so I'd like to close with just a reminder of this one visual representation. He was supreme in the beginning and leading the resurrection parade. He is supreme in the end. From beginning to end, he's there, towering far above everything and everyone. That visualization of a parade of saved, with Christ in front leading the way, and everyone knowing their destination. Our call is to increase the size of that parade. We can do that in many different ways. We can't get there by what we do. We can only get there by what we know, what we believe. And so to be able to be a part of that parade We need to go and shine that light as we talk about so much here. That's not just a slogan. It is our call. And that's the message that we try to portray to these kids. You will notice a change in the youth program as we go forward where we're focused much more on service. We're focused much more on giving to others and witnessing to others and trying to include more of those young, impressionable minds that Screwtape identified as the target audience, those young, impressionable minds to be included in this glorious parade of salvation. Please join me in prayer.